Blog Talk Radio.
We are now sounding like it's okay. I think this HD system is more of a problem than it's supposed to be. So I do apologize. My guest today is Itzhak Berry. He's an internationally recognized shamanic healer and teacher. He was initiated into the circle of 24 Yakeks by his Kuichi teacher in Ecuador and by Amazonian Kananari Page. He's also trained intensively with other elders from South and North America, and he's the founder of shamanportal.org and co-founder of the New York Shaman Circle. So, Itzhak, welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be with you.
Great. we haven't had any shamans on the program in the past, and this is it's really a delight for me because I think there's a great deal of disconnect with modern society, with nature, the natural forces that are present on Earth. And I think what's happening is, and you can describe this a little more clearly, I think this disconnection is causing great mental and physical illness in our society. And you can address that in a minute, but I'm curious, your book, by the way, is wonderful. It's called The Gift of Shamanism, Visionary Power, Anahuasca Dreams and Journeys to Other Realms. And it's being published by, Baring Company, but I'm going to, and I'll put this information out there, but Itzhak, tell us about your journey in becoming a shaman. Why would you, an American, want to become a shaman?
It wasn't something that I planned to be. You know, it's something that really happened to me. A situation always comes to teach us or to lead us to where we need to be. And for me, it was a series of coincidences that led to where I was. As you might know, I was a visual artist, and I had my advertising agency. I was not planning to become a healer, or definitely not a shaman. And in my midlife, when I was very much at the end of my 30s, I started to feel this void in myself, and I didn't know what was my life purpose, why I'm here on this earth. And I got a little depressed over that. I achieved quite a lot before, and had many awards and many achievements, but it wasn't enough. There was something missing. There was like a hole. And I happened to read a book by Hank Rosselman, Spirit Walker, which I found very interesting and answered a lot of my inner questions. And in that book, there was a description of a workshop that Michael Hahner I was giving. And when I came back from Hawaii, where I was going at the time, I found out that Michael Hunter is teaching a workshop here in New York. So I took that coincidence as a sign that I need to take that workshop, and that really opened my door to start seeing. And then I took a workshop after workshop, and I went to Ecuador with John Perkins, and I met some shamans there, and I became apprentice of one of those. A few years later, that's what I found myself doing. not so much because I wanted, is because this shaman who became a teacher really pushed me to become one.
Would you say that in your journey in the shamanistic world, would you say that a part of you was reaching out for a reconnection with Earth? Do you think that maybe that was the reason that you came into this lifetime, was to reconnect on a deeper level and to kind of show others how to reconnect?
Yes. I grew up in kibbutz in Israel, and I was very much exposed to nature all my childhood. I was very intimate connection to the mountains and to the plants and the trees, to the animals all around me, and to the weather. And so when I started to work with shamanism, I started to reconnect to that childhood memories and the imprints that this nature had on me. It really felt very, very familiar. And when I was in the Andes and the Amazon, it was as if I came back home. I started to feel the connection. The trees were starting to speak to me, and the mountains were speaking to me. So it was like, and I think that the whole shamanic journey is really about reconnecting to nature, to the environment, and to the elements. It was as if I came home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's what I'm really teaching other people to do.
Mm-hmm. In my journeys in Central America, the elders who I've spoken to, and I've spoken to Mayan elders, say that Western culture is disconnected from the spirit of the earth. And a number of elders have said that they're worried. And this is not even Mayan elders. This is American, Native American elders who have talked and spoken about the lack of connection, the lack of compassion for nature. Have your teachers mentioned that to you? Do you think one of the reasons that they felt that you were a good candidate to become a shaman?
Well, I don't really know why they chose me, but yes, our Western civilization have a dream, and that dream is not what the dream that the indigenous people have. We have a dream of separateness, of disconnecting from nature. We are what our greatest achievement is technology. And the technology to protect us from nature. And, everything that we do, we build buildings that are isolated from the weather. We everything that we do really is about controlling our environment and building, not living with nature, but really forcing ourselves on nature. And that's the dream of the industrial corporate world, if you want to call it. What the shamans in the Andes and the Amazon are calling us is to change that dream, to dream a dream of community, of oneness with nature, to feel that we are not separate from the animals and from the trees and from our brothers, the rocks and the plants, but to be part of them. And I think that's really the goal of the shamanic movement, or the new renaissance in the West, is that people feel disconnected from nature, and they are looking for ways to connect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In your book, there's a fascinating quote that I'd like you to decipher for us. And I'm going to read right out from here. That there is a shamanic teaching that says, the world is as we dream it, not as we see it. What does that mean?
Well, in the shamanic tradition, we believe that the world is all alive. It's all energy that is forming in different vibrations and a different structure. And what we see in what we call the middle world, the world that we are able to connect with in our five senses, is what we know, or what we giving labels to. So the world is as we dream it. Is we can allow ourselves to dream a different world, a different reality. So if you believe, if your dream is that the world is of separateness, that man is controlling the environment, the men or the humans are controlling the animals and everything else around, that's your dream. And what we are trying to do in going back to the shamanic roots of, and by the way, that it's not unique to the people, the indigenous people, everybody has connection to spirit. Everybody is a shaman. Everybody is a healer. That's the belief that they believe. So if we can change that to understand that the way we think, the way we talk, the way we express our ideas, this is part of our dream.
Interesting. It's my belief that the ancients had, and when I say ancient people, I mean Maya, the Egyptians, sophisticated societies, revered the earth, revered the natural elements, and had more connection to earth-based elements and animals and things like that. And the Industrial Revolution pulled us away from that. And some people feel that there's a level of greed and self-centeredness that has kind of made us a society of sick individuals. And this is why the shamanistic movement is so needed today, because it helps us reconnect with the earth. But what do you feel? I mean, you live in New York, the capital of marketing and Western culture in some people's eyes. What do you think, that there is a disconnect that needs to be healed, or is it just the natural progression of our society? What can you say? How do you describe where we're at and where we should be as a shaman?
We are disconnected. That there's no questions about that. Again, this was the dream that we were dreaming about, man controlling the environment. The interesting part that I see in the Shaman Portal, the website that I created, is that most of the people who come to the site, and not just because they have computers, are coming from the San Francisco Bay Area, from New York City, from the big urban centers in the world, in Europe, because they feel that disconnect, and they are yearning for connection, to a community. They yearn for to be part of nature, to to be part of the universe, not separate from the universe. That's really the journey and the yearning of our community now. And it all come, you know, from the prophecy of the Mayan and the prophecies of the Inca, that we are now in a new Pachacuti, a new period of time that started around 1993, that it was 500 years of occupations of South America, that white people came there and conquered them. And in 1993, the prophecy said that the eagle of the south and the eagle of the north and the condor of the south will start flying in the same sky together, which is a great symbol. You know, in shamanism, we speak in a symbolism, in a metaphor. The condor represent the biggest bird that fly closest to the sun, to Tata Inti. It's the bird that is very much environmental. It doesn't kill. It builds their nest on the rock and on the environment. They fertilize the earth with what they eat. And so they are a bird that lives with nature. The eagle, on the other hand, is a totally different character to it. It's a bird that builds a nest. It's a bird that kills. It's a bird that controls. So the idea is that the new Pachacuti is a correction of time. It's a time where both birds can teach and teach their values to the other communities. So the people in the South can have more of the logical mind or the industrialization of the North, and the people of the North can reconnect with nature, with their heart, with the femininity of nature. And when you talked about the imbalance of our society and why people are getting sick and why people are getting depressed, and this is the most important part, is that the feminine energies and the masculine energies need to be reunited. They need to be working in balance with each other. Most of the people who get sick is because they don't have balance, those energies balance in their bodies. They are either too much in their head, they are too separate, they are too logical, they don't have faith. In the shamanic healing, when we work, we are the gist of it is to bring balance to people. Back into their life, to open up their intuition, to open up their communications with nature, to bring them back into a community. And the healing that is done in the South is to have people there joining us in the technological revolution that we have, with more of the logical mind. And I think that's really the core of the work today, is to be able to be both in the feminine energies and in the masculine energies.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that, and it's funny because I listened to a YouTube video, and you say very succinctly, and I think it's a good quote, you say that each of us in America is like an iPod or an iPad.
That's
we
right.
Have, you know, we're like computers, but is that masculine or a feminine energy when you state that? It seems to me it's more masculine.
Well, yes. Well, it depends how you use that. You use your iPhone. Well, I give that image to people, because the iPhone is like a human being, have a body and have software, and they have the, we have the antennas, the receivers, and the broadcasting ability. It seems to me that more and more we are using the logic more, or the software that was given to us, but we are not really using the antennas. We and you know, similarly to iPhone, the calls that come to you, they come from thin air. You don't see them coming. You don't know where they're coming from. And in the shamanic work, we are strengthening the signals, our ability to receive the signals, to be able to connect to spirits, to be able to receive information from the other world, from the spirit world, and bring it back to us, so we can actually make our practical life better or more balanced. So I think that it's in a way, in the way you use your iPhone, your qualities inside. That is indicating if you are more using your masculine energies or the feminine energies.
Okay. I want to get into the work of a shaman, but before I do, I want to ask you a question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but me, I think that we have lost a quality that as a human being is a natural extension of who we are. And I talked a little bit about it in the beginning, and in my work with Native Americans, and it is a quality of a connection with the earth that our ancestors had. And when we go to ruins, the Mayan ruins, and we go to other ancient places in South America, there seems like, although there's no writing, it seems like those people were a different, had a different connection to the earth, had a different connection to themselves, to their communities, and worked with natural elements. They made megaliths out of big stones, and and you don't see metal, you don't see a lot of the things that you see today in our culture, because we developed our culture in a different way, in a different mindset. But my question to you is, do you believe that shamanism is a derivative or developed from those ancient societies that may have more of a connection, and shamanism is an outgrowth from that, and today, because we are disconnected and these shamans are showing us the ancient ways? I mean, what is your belief in the ancient cultures?
Well, I think that from the time that humans started to walk on this earth, they, for their own survival, they had to find ways to work with nature, to understand the signs of nature, to find out where the animals are, to get themselves shelter, so they created a system of connection to the weather spirit, to the tree spirit, to the mountains, to they observed animals. They lived intimately with nature, and that understanding that they are not separate from the animals, that we are animals ourselves, that we are part of creation as a whole, and we have to live in harmony with that. That is shamanism And shamanism is not something that anybody invented, and it's being practiced in different parts of the world differently and had different names to that practice. You know, the word shaman itself is only used, or the word saman actually used in the Tungus tradition in Siberia. It's when the Russian came and colonized Siberia, they started to use that word as a shaman. And that word really started to spread all around the world. And now we call all these practices, the earth honoring, the earth connection for healing and for work with spirit, we are now calling that shamanism. It's very much like we use one word to describe all soft drinks like Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. So today we are using the word shaman or shamanic practitioners is one word that described many qualities or many practices that people use. And, you know, the power of the connection to spirit and the connection to the earth is in the fact that we survived for so many millions of years. If you remember that the Industrial Revolution started only a few hundred years ago, and right. because we have such a short memory, we think that this is how the world works. but this is a truly a new invention. The way the Western societies our lifestyle and belief system is. Before that, for all people on this earth, there was a deep connection and to the earth and to the earth spirit. They created a pantheon of spirit. I mean, you can see it in every culture that they created God and gods and goddesses, and you know, but all of that is in recognition for the powers of those elements. Like, if you take the god Sun or Tata Inti, the father of all of us, which is the sun. The sun is a body of energy of fire that or light that emit light equally to all people on this earth, not only people, but for animals and plants and trees and rocks. And so the sun in all cultures and also in Christianity later on became the elements of God, the God that we all are praying for. And so in many ways, in the modern religions, which is very short time, if you can call it 2,000 or 3,000 years, this is they took a lot of the symbolism from the earth-based shamanism, and they repackaged them in a different way. And you can find a lot of the shamanic practices today in Judaism, in Muslims, in Christianity. They all use fire and smoke and water and blood and bread and all of those elements that are very much part of the shamanic tradition, because people connect to those elements. And it's basically it's a repackaging of old belief. Nothing really changed, but the language we speak or the dream that we speak in. So I think that the movement that we have now, the shamanic movement, is because of disillusion with religion, because disillusion of the big government, the corporations, the insurance companies. We really don't, we understand that we need to go back to the roots of humanity, and the roots of humanity is our connection to nature.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I want to bring up one last thing here, and then I want to talk about the practice of shamanism, shamanic practice. It seems to me that everything I've read about shamanism is regarding senses and sensibilities and the multiple senses, the levels of perception. And there is a discussion about the sixth sense or a sixth dimension that is not used enough. I mean, we have taste, touch, smell, and then there's intuition, and then there's other senses. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of the loss of that sensitivity and how a shaman works in those other dimensions?
In the shamanic tradition, we believe that there is the upper world, middle world, and the lower world. Each one of them has a different consciousness and different symbolism and different messages for us. In the shamanic tradition, we really believe that the world that we are living in, that we are able to conjure in our five senses, is a very limited world. That it's a changing world. If you look at the plant grows and dies. You know, everything has a movement there and it dies. But the real world are the world of the unseen, or the world of spirit. And if we are talking about it, we can talk about it in a way. If you want to talk about it in a quantum physics or in quantum mechanics way, everything is energy in this world. And everything that has energy has consciousness. It's this little particles that banging each other and creating different vibrations. That vibrations is the consciousness. Now the question is, can we tap into that vibrations and can we tap into this consciousness? And as we get separated from nature, as we get separated from our senses, we are also disconnecting from this ability. And that's really the work we're doing, to increase our ability to connect to spirit, to what is permanent. And the only thing that is permanent is the soul, the spirit, and those energies that are roaming in the unseen world. There are many different ideas in many different practices. How many levels of the upper world or middle world or of the lower world there is, but the principles is the same, that all answers are in the unseen world. It's a question of also understanding that time and space is a constant. It's not something that is big. There is a beginning and end. So the shamanic practice teaches people to reconnect to that intuition and knowledge that they have, to find information that can make them more connected to the unseen world.
Fascinating. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the shamanic practice. And in your book, one of the topics that keeps coming up is a system called soul retrieval. Why is this, and why does it seem, why is it important? I think, obviously, tell us a little bit about it. I don't want to talk too much about it. I want you to tell us about it. I mean, it's fascinating. It's just totally fascinating.
Well, everything has a soul, right? Everything has spirit. And when we are born, we are coming, our soul comes to embody our body. I think that's part of what we understand. As we grow older, as we grow up, we face with all kind of obstacles and traumas and events that we have no control over. And in order for us to sustain, to continue to live our life, sometimes when we have trauma, part of that soul leaves, so we can continue to live without the pain of these experiences. You can, many of us feel sometimes in their life for sure that there is a hole, there is a void, there is emptiness in their energy field or in their in the emotional world. And that is when you know that people get depressed, that people get disconnected from society. That is the work of soul loss and soul retrieval. So the shaman would go into the in connection with his spirit guides, which we didn't talk about that before. But the shaman connect to spirit helpers that are could be found in the shape of animal spirit or in waka, which is sacred items, and that could be mountains, trees, or rocks, or anything else, and ask that spirit guides to help him find that incidence that caused the client for to depart part of his soul. And once he find it, he track it and then communicate with that soul and ask the soul, that part of the soul, to come back to the clients and to reunite with it, so the person could be fully can hold that spirit again. And when that happened, people who have done through this process feel happy, complete. They feel like their life came back to them again. Mm-hmm. It is practiced differently in many different cultures. There, or the process of soul retrieval is done in different differently in different cultures. But we all these shamanic traditions believe in that some parts of our soul to face difficulties, leave. And in regular psychology, which is a new, if you look at time, it's pretty much new. They can call it sometimes disassociation, that you disassociate from that part of yourself that that doesn't want to feel that pain. It happens to a lot of people who been sexually abused or went through car accidents or any other emotional traumas.
Mm. It's interesting. You speak of spirit guides, and it's a big part of a shaman's work and your work. These spirit guides are in the form, a lot of them are in the form of animals, and the animal world is a big part of the work of a shaman. Can you talk a little bit about the integral connection and how the animal, I think, you know, as I was reading your book, you help people find their spirit animal, and that spirit animal is integral in not only helping to find healing, but also in communicating important aspects of an individual's life. Can you talk a little bit about the spirit animal and why it's so critical?
Yeah. There are some traditions that believe that those spirit and animal spirit actually come to be with you or guide you from the time you come out to this world. They are around you. And in many of the listeners for sure can remember when they were young that they were attracted to this, to a particular animal, or they really love this particular stuffed animal, and those animals kind of appears in by coincidence in their life over and over and over again. Those are the spirits that we are talking about, and shamans use those spirit guides as a tool in many ways to connect to those spirits who are in the above or in the unseen world. Some people believe that those power animals or spirit guides are just the fruit of our imagination, that we're just making this up. Some people believe that this is could be our consciousness. Some people believe that they are real, like I do, because I see them. So we don't really know what they are, but they are all symbols of qualities that people either possess or they need to learn from. So in Native American, it's called medicine animals. So we all have to learn what the medicine are. And the medicine the symbolism come from observation of the natural world. So if you watch a red fox and you can see how cunning and how survivalist that animal is, and how it always finds the path to food, or how they raise their kids, and you can understand that there are qualities that are associated with the red fox, and so on with the jaguar, with lions and elephants and other animals, or the condors and the eagles. Each one of them come here to teach us something. And that's what the shamans use, that symbols of these animals. And part of the shamanic work is to get people connected to their power animal, not just as a vanity, but to give them tools to journey themselves, to connect with those power animals, so they can get information from the unseen world and bring it back to what we call reality to make changes in their life. And so you have to remember that shamanism is not about spirituality. It's not about it's not about being enlightened. It's about making changes, practical changes in your life. And the proof always has to be where if you can apply those messages or these visions and bring it into your life and make your life better, that is the power of those journeys.
Mm-hmm. As a shaman, and your book is fascinating, Itzhak. I really enjoyed reading it.
Thank you.
Did you talk about your journey from Western culture into the shaman's world? And they use a number of psychotropic drugs that shift the perception and force the individual into these altered states of reality. Was your experience with ayahuasca, the very powerful mind drug, a scary kind of a trip into reality? And would you say that when you delved into that world, that you were shifted forever in a permanent way?
Yes, I think that using plant medicine is a very powerful agent for people to connect to the higher consciousness or to a different reality. But it's not the only one. The shamanic journey technique, which is used by many shamans and rattling or dancing and music and sound and movement and all of that. These are all techniques that help people shift from our ordinary reality to the higher realities or to the to be able to connect to the unseen world. If it was scary, yes, it is scary. But I came to it after doing a few years of shamanic journeys, and so I knew how to navigate these visions and these images that I've seen. The problem is today is with people that they come to it virgins. They don't have any way to communicate with. they don't have a way to communicate with spirit, and all of a sudden they drink the ayahuasca and immediately they throw them into a world that they have no way to understand the symbolism, to understand the communication, though to hold it. So it is scary. There are some ayahuasca journeys that I've done that were really beautiful, and some people that I know had a very Walt Disney-like images, but and some people didn't have visions at all. But it's a very powerful meeting with the spirit of Grandma Ayahuasca, which is probably one of the most powerful psychedelic you can have. For me personally, I made a commitment to this journey that I'm on, partly because of the vision that I had with ayahuasca. So it is a life-altering way to connect to spirit. But I do really recommend for people who are planning to do this kind of work, to really take it seriously and prepare themselves way before to be able to witness that and to absorb it and then integrate it into their life, not to come so cavalierly to something that is so sacred.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's a really good insight, is to take it seriously, to discover what your path is through some work, and then maybe consider taking this powerful plant medicine, as you call it. Your work in the book covers a great deal of subject matters, but I want to talk about a couple that I thought was interesting. In your work with your clients, you access a number of different tools. Your spirit animal, connecting through other roots. But you also work with something that I'm fascinated with, and that is an individual's past lives. Mm-hmm. And you give a number of examples of people, including yourself as Margaret,
yes.
which I thought was quite interesting. Can you talk a little bit about how past lives bleed into the present life, and maybe not influence us heavily, but in some cases maybe they do influence us heavily, but do influence us. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
And how you as a shaman can work with that?
Yeah, I have to say that I was born skeptical. Well, maybe not, but I became a very skeptical person. So for me, when people were talking about past life regression and all this idea that I was Pharaoh, I was Jesus, I was a Native American chief, all of that stuff, I used to make really fun of them, with my own sarcasm. But when it happened to me, I was really in a big shock. And it really happened to me totally by, I was unprepared. I was working in the Andes with Don Esteban Tamayo's doing a healing session there. And all of a sudden I had this vision of myself in a form of a young woman and in a sanitarium in Vienna in the 1880, and it was so real, it was so detailed that I was totally shocked. And at the end of that vision, I threw myself out of the third floor building and died. And I saw all of it from above, like a drone. And it was so detailed that I was in total disbelief and shock. But when I came out of that, I was thinking about it, it was very clear to me that that experience was maybe the reason why I always had a fear of height. And when I realized that that past life influenced my behavior in this world, that was my biggest shock of all, because that means that I was carrying that memory from another life that I lived and bringing it into this lifetime. And the interesting part, and I wrote about it in this book, is that when I realized that and we went to the Amazon and crossed this hanging bridge, which I was so afraid of from the very beginning of this trip, because I knew that I can't cross that bridge. I didn't want to stay on one side. But when I went in the middle of that bridge, I started to dance. I really felt this incredible healing of that past life. And it took me a couple of years later to realize that all that vision was true. I went to Vienna, and a woman who I was teaching a workshop there took me to she worked in the Vienna Museum, and we went through all the drawers of that period. And we verify every detail of that vision. So it's a very powerful explanation. So I'm no longer sarcastic about that. I just know that that the past life experiences do influence our life here. And many times what we think that are happening in our life and we don't understand why, it could have happened in another lifetime. And part of the reason why we are here is to heal that. And there are other, like you said, there are other stories in the book with my clients that, one woman was testing me to see if I can see the past life that she had this dream about, or somebody was telling her about that, and I was looking at her, and that picture of this hologram picture of her past life came over so powerfully that verified for her it was exactly the same vision that she had, that lifetime she was a soldier she was a knight in a fight in England over there. But the most interesting part is that the feeling of betray of her friend who didn't save her in the battle, this is the same betrayal that she feels all around her, or she felt all around her in this lifetime. So it's a fascinating experience. And I think that that's really also the power of that book, is that you can see that I came from a very skeptic, sarcastic non-believer, and I had to face it that those experiences are real. And I think that if you look at shamanism, that is the power of shamanism, that when your vision comes true, it's not something that somebody tells you. It's something that you really experience within yourself, and you know that it's true. You don't need to tell. You don't need any priest or teacher or government to tell you what's true or not. You're just experiencing truth.
You know, it's fascinating as I listen to you, Itzhak. I have to comment, and it seems to me that the role of the shaman is to help us become authentic. And
absolutely.
And this is something that I want to talk a little bit about, which is extremely important, because we can live our lives as in a false reality, thinking that we're doing what we were supposed to be doing, thinking that we're living the life that we are here to do, and it could be completely false, and we're miserable, and we're sick, and we don't know why we have to take drugs, and our heart's not working, and we can't crap anymore, we're constipated, and it's like one thing after another, and a shaman is here to show us that we need to live in a more naturalistic way. And the tools that you have been provided with, it seems to me, and you can present this and tell us more, but you have been given a bag of tools to help extract the office, how to be authentic. Is that how you would put it?
Yes, absolutely. And I believe that we all, each one of us, come to this world with a special mission, with a special life purpose, that our soul from up above choose the parents, and they choose the teachers, the situations, the circumstances of our life, to teach us something, or to bring us closer to our authentic self, to authentic soul. And so big part of my work is to help people find their life purpose. Because when you are on, when I'm talking about life purpose, I'm not talking about being a bus driver or being a healer or being, it's not a profession. It's a place where you come to do everything that you do. It's the gist, it's the core, it's the place where you feel the most satisfaction, more passionate about. So that is incredibly important to people to realize, that it's not their job that is they make them miserable. And I have stories like that in many places for many people. It's not the job that you do. It's the place where you come to do your job. So yes, it's when you become authentic with yourself, then there is this quietness, this assuredness that what you do everywhere is, and it's reflect with your family, reflect with your community. You no longer feel angry or depressed, or you just know that you are flowing in the same river of life and in exactly the way that you meant to be.
Can you expand on that a little bit? When you say your purpose, it's not the work that you're doing, like the work that you do to make money. You're saying that it's more of the existence and how you go about communicating and living your life. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. I wrote about it a little bit in the book about myself. You know, my life purpose is to bring messages to the large audience. So when I was young, I really wanted to tell stories, which is what I do in the book now.
Right.
But I was very talkative. I wanted to tell people, because I have a very important message to express to people. And the woman who took care of us in the kibbutz, she got really sick of listening to me all the time, right? So she told me one day that you know, God gave us a certain amount of words, and if I use them now, then I will die. I have no reason to leave. And that was a very a soul loss part of me, because I realized that if I would express myself, if I have something important to say, that means that I will I'm going to die. So I was very aware that not to speak too much, to hold on to, but my yes, and so it's actually, there's a lot of different aspects of shamanism in that story, because she basically cursed me.
Right.
So I had to remove that curse from her. I have to bring that soul of the person who needs to communicate on a large scale to very intimate, only a few people. And that, of course, this is not satisfies me. So when I started to do the shamanic work, I started to realize that my life purpose is that of being on stage and speaking about ideas, and I have messages to convey. And that was my healing. And whenever I do that, I feel whole, authentic, and complete.
Hmm.
You understand? So
So
each person has a different life purpose. Sometimes your life purpose is to experience love. Sometimes your life purpose is to be a woman of power. And of course, there is this, always the challenges that challenge us to get to that place, like that woman who cursed me. But I could be a truck driver and still have messages. I don't have to be a shaman to do that. Mm-hmm. Somehow that I happen to be. And you can be a woman of power, and you can be a nurse, and you can be a politician, or you can be a housewife. It's not really what you do, but it's the way you come to do what you came here to do. I hope I'm clear.
Yeah. Well, let me just follow that up. Not everybody can go to a shaman. And this broadcast is reaching thousands and thousands of people that mm-hmm. are listening to you and are probably going to be curious, and maybe we'll read some more. But for those of us who cannot get to somebody who can tweak their purpose, how does one clarify their mission or purpose individually?
Well,
how do they go about doing that?
Well, there is a very interesting simple exercise that I give in my workshops about that. You can sit down and close your eyes, and I do that with 10 or 12 stones, and you hold a stone in your hand, and you're thinking what kind of trauma that is so strong in my life, and you go through like 10 of those, and basically you are looking at all your life lessons or your life obstacles and all your traumas, and you can write them down. So you bring the trauma into the stone, you release that trauma into the stone, and you create a circle. And then when you are done, look at the thread that connect all of those traumas. Because I'm quite sure that if you look at all of those events, the negative event in our life, you will see there is a thread. And the thread could be power, the thread could be love, the thread could be expression, many different things. And you can turn this around, and you can see, this is what I came here to experience. And in many ways, it takes away, it changed the narrative of your life experiences from hating all those people who did these horrible things for you, and it makes them become your teachers. They show you what you need to learn about your life mission on this earth. And it gives you also the power because you chose them, you create them, so you could go and find that place in yourself.
Fascinating.
Try it and let me know.
I'm going to definitely check that one out. That sounds fascinating. What would you say is a typical issue that your clients have that seems to be, typical? In other words, is there like a universal issue for us that live in the Western society with all our electronic gadgets and all of our access to immediate stimuli and attention deficit disorder because we're just bombarded? I mean, is it that we need to be more present, or what would you say as a shaman you see that is an issue that needs to be addressed more fully?
They come for many different reasons. Many people come because of depression, maybe they come because of physical illness. Many people come because of relationships. The common thing is, I think in our society, is that we don't have faith. We don't have trust in the universe. We really feel controlled victims of other situations and not in our own power. I think that this is probably one of the most powerful things you see in the jungle, that shamans or the indigenous people have incredible faith in the natural world. They understand that everything that is in the universe came here to be for a purpose, for a reason. It's not by coincidence. And I think that we really lost it in our society. We really lost it.
So that disconnection with nature created a paranoia, maybe.
Yeah,
and
imbalance.
And an imbalance that is causing us a lot of problems.
Yes, I truly believe that.
We just have a few more minutes, and I have to ask you this, and you can say, Cliff, it changes every day or whatever, but do you have a vision for the future in your work? Do you have a vision, Itzhak, that you can say, I see the future and it looks bright? Or, I see the future, it doesn't look good, and until we address this problem and that problem, we're going to be in serious trouble. I'm just curious to know what you see.
I'm optimistic. I can see that there is a movement, a more progressive movement in this world. You know, today we're talking about Irish, the Ireland people who made a declaration that all people are equal in a Catholic state. There's that kind of movement. It's happening here in the United States. It's all over the world. Our world is more transparent. People are disillusioned with all those constructs that our society built. And so there is a movement of making life more equal and better for all. But you have to understand that as much as those movements go forward, the reactionary forces are not wanting to lose their grip on power. So I think that if we're talking about here, maybe I can say it. I hope people would not get upset about that. But we are talking about good and evil forces here. And the good forces are it's the energy that is moving and flowing and embrace life or equality of life. It's like the river. And there are the other forces, the dark forces, that they live off fear and greed and grabbing, because of that, they're grabbing for power. Mm-hmm. And in some shamanic traditions, they believe that the evil spirit in the world are looking for those people to work through them, those people who hold fear, and they're using them to. So there's a huge struggle between those two energies, what we call the good and evil. Some cultures mm-hmm. believe that there's no good and evil, that all energy is good. That's also a possibility. In the Amazonian Andes tradition, the what you call evil spirit or bad spirit or negative spirit are the energies it's heavier energies, the energy that wants to choke life, not to move on with life. And you can see it in the United States. There's a whole group of people that are devoted to limit freedom, to limit democracy, to limit flow of ideas and science and all of that because of fear of the future. And I personally believe, or I wanted to believe, that the more people who would embrace the gift of shamanism, the more chance we have to make the world as we dream it, as a equalized place, a place of honoring each creation on this earth as equal. And that's what my hope, that we will embrace the elements, we embrace the natural world, we embrace the unseen world, that we would be more in balance with ourselves. And we are all shamans. Each one of us is a shaman or have shamanic capability. You don't have to practice it. But it's definitely qualities that you have within yourself. Every person have a way of dreaming, of experiencing the unseen world, have visions, deja vus. Every person can touch and feel and speak kindly to other people and create healing in communities. That's what we really hope, that the new dream, the new Pachakuti, the new period of time of corrections will happen, and it's more of a vision where the feminine energies will be allowed back into the masculine world that we created with the industrial world.
Fascinating. My guest has been Itzhak Berry. The book is The Gift of Shamanism. What is your website so people can go to it again? It's shaman.org. What was it again?
Well, my personal one is my name, itzhakberry.com, and the shaman portal is shamanportal.org, is a hub for all the global shamanic activities with information and articles and blogs and links and news. It's a way that I created it because of one of those visions when I went to South America and did ayahuasca. That's the commitment I made to help people to connect with nature and protect.
So they can. It doesn't matter where they live in the world. That website allows them to connect with local shamans, or is it just more articles?
No. I mean, there is a listing of different shamanic activities, trips, workshops, teachings, and there is also a resource for each of the for many different categories like healers and plant medicine and rattles and drums. So it's a resource center for everybody to come to explore shamanism. And there is articles, there are different news that you can go and read about different shamanic teachings. So it's a hub of information, but it's useful information like shamanism is. Shamanism is about being useful, being practical, to apply it to your life, to make your life more balanced. And so that this website is about that. Okay. My website, my book website is thegiftofshamanism.com.
Okay, wonderful. And I'll post that on our Facebook page, shamanportal.org, so everyone can check it out. And I guess where you're going to be speaking in the next month or two or so on, so people can come out and see you if you're speaking in their area. Do you leave the New York area and come around the country, or are you pretty much in that location?
Most of my work is done actually in Europe. So I teach a lot in different countries in Europe, but I also teach here in New York City and other places. And I always like adventures, so if you invite me, I'll come.
Wonderful. It's like it's been a pleasure having you on the program, and I know I've enjoyed it, and I think our audience has enjoyed it, and much success, and I look forward to your next book, if it's coming up or not. I think that...
My next book is coming up in August. The end of August, I think. It's called Shamanic Transformations, and it's actually anthology of stories that I collected from many different shamans, very powerful people who today they are on they are authors and very well known people who describe the moment of their awakening, the moment of aha, where the world changed around them forever.
Wow!
So it's a fascinating book that I was so lucky to be able to do, mostly because of Shaman Portal, because people were writing about those moments, and that came the idea to bring to people everywhere. You don't have to have you don't have to be a shaman to have an awakening moment. You know, that all this enlightenment business is equally democratic to every person. And so, but in this case, because we are dealing with the shamanic work, these are really wonderful practitioners who were so graciously brought us into their most personal moment of their discovery. So that comes up in the end of August.
That sounds like a fascinating book. Can you give us a name or two of some well-known people that actually reveal their aha moments? Or...
of course. we can start with Sandra Ingerman and John Perkins and Oscar Miro Quesada and Hank Hasselman and Luis Miro.
Wow.
There's a Tom Cowan. These are really people that you want to read their. These are stories that they never told before. So I believe in the most that people really need to share their personal stories or secrets or something that they never share, that it's outside of their persona. And it's really nice to be able to be a witness of that moment that changed these people's life forever.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that to that book, because reading about other people's clarity is fascinating when they have the aha moment that this is something that's really, really significant.
And I'm sure it will awaken some moments in your life too. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's what happens with certain people. They read others' perspectives, and all of a sudden it's like, you know what? That's kind of what happened to me.
That's it. That's it. That's the whole idea, is to encourage people to be in their power.
Wow. Fantastic. Thank you again, and we'll definitely have to have you back on the program to talk about that book. So,
oh, I'm looking forward to.
Fascinating. Thank you again for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So that's today's program, and we will re-edit this. So if you're listening, we will be presenting it again to the wider program through CBS radio, which is Play It, through Blog Talk Radio, and through Stitcher Radio and Deezer. So I do hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again soon.